Blog Talk Radio.
It's a poignant, transcendent journey. Riveting and raucous, it's a wild, exhilarating ride. Everybody fasten your seatbelts.
I am salivating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are
The following presentation is controversial and may be offensive to some audiences. Discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of HIAC Talk Radio. I am, of course, the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County, like the song, Folsom County. You can also follow the official Twitter at HIAC Talk Radio, as well as check out that website, HIACTalkRadio.com. With me, and he has been here since for quite some time now, but with me as always, it's our MMA and wrestling analyst. It is Omega Squad, Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir?
Hello, kind listeners. Follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad.
That's right. Omega Squad is where the action happens every couple of days.
I'm not a prolific tweeter.
You're not. I wish you were, though, because I would enjoy seeing more of your thoughts.
So. I should be, but I just... who's got that kind of time?
Well, you know...
140 characters is a lot.
Some people complain that it's too little.
Yeah, I know, but...
You're not one of those people.
I'm not one of those people. I'm a man of few words. I do a podcast every week.
Our guest has arrived. Of course, that's Mick Maynard. Mick Maynard is the owner of Legacy Fighting Championships. Of course, it's that wonderful Texas promotion that is on Axis TV. They've started expanding. They've gotten out of the Texas area a few times now. Oklahoma, I believe, is one. They went to New Mexico as well. Holly Holm is a big name there. We're going to discuss all this. Henry Cejudo, he's actually at Legacy Fighting Championship 31 coming up, fighting for a title. We have a lot to discuss here with Mick Maynard, and he's our guest right after this. Right, my guest at this time, and of course you're also with Chris as well, is Mick Maynard. Mick, how are you doing here tonight?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
We are doing well. Now, I just wanted to start out, of course, one of the biggest things with Legacy Fighting Championships right now is this expansion that you guys are on. You guys went to Oklahoma, as I said. You guys went to New Mexico. You've had some fights. What has that experience been like for Legacy Fighting Championships?
I mean, so far it couldn't have been better. We've sold out each of our events at each of those states, and then we're moving it to Louisiana in June. So June 20th will be our first Louisiana show, and we're almost sold out already there. So the expansion has been successful, no doubt about it.
Wow, so almost sold out in Louisiana. That really has to speak well for moving further out of the Texas area.
It is. I mean, you know, we'd like to, anywhere that comes up that makes sense, we're open to doing it. And you know, look, the venues and the casinos that we're working with, we've worked out a good situation. that's a win-win. So they get the opportunity to do well, we get the opportunity to do well, and I think a lot of times that's not always the case. So the fact that we've been able to work out good deals with them, and we bring in a great show. I mean, you know, I think that if you ever go to one of our live shows, you'll see that for yourself. Our shows are excellent. They really are.
And that really translates through with the deal with Access TV that you guys have. Now, just a question, and this is a complete hypothetical, but is there any chance that perhaps Legacy one day will be able to take this kind of to a national scale, similar to what UFC does with events in Philadelphia, with events in California, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, we're actually working on a venue in Chicago right now. So
wow.
we would go pretty much anywhere if it made sense, and we have this thing down pat. It's a well-oiled machine, so we really aren't intimidated by any place whatsoever. And so, yeah, we would absolutely do that, no doubt about it. Those are the goals.
Yeah. Now, Mick, you've had a lot of events over in to start off in 2014. What's been the highlight of those three events? Is it?
Man, you know what? That's tough. I mean, we've really had a great year so far, and honestly, yeah, we're based out of Texas, and our Texas shows have been great as well, of course. But honestly, our best shows to date have been out of Texas. The Hard Rock Casino is a beautiful venue. It's the one we were at was a Tulsa, Oklahoma, but it had it very much was a brand. It's only a few years old. So it had a very new casino, had a Vegas feel about it. It's a very popular spot there in Tulsa, so it had a very young, hip vibe about it. The place was packed. It's a beautiful venue, beautiful setup. It was great fights. So, you know, the Tulsa one was awesome, and then we turned around 2 weeks later, and we hit Albuquerque, and that was sold out, or very close to sold, pretty much sold out. We had individual seats available with. It's always hard to fill. Nobody wants to sit by themselves. But, you know, obviously we had Holly Holm there. It was probably, you know, honestly, it was the first time that we had ever just had, a star on the level of Holly that just sold the place out. Does that make sense? I mean, she's really become a star in MMA. She's obviously a very huge star. In Albuquerque, where she's from. And so when she fought, and it wasn't just her, all the fighters on that card were awesome. Ray Borg, as he left the cage, from what I've been told, basically when he left the cage after his huge win over Nick Urso, and those two are probably two of the best prospects in New Mexico and Albuquerque, and when he left the cage, he got a call to the UFC. So obviously 2 weeks later, he went from the Legacy cage to the UFC cage. That was incredible. Holly, of course, broke her arm in the first round, but still finished the fight and put on an incredible performance. Julie Werner, the person, you know, the girl who fought Holly, was so impressive. Such a warrior, such a sweet person, but fought so hard. There were just so many high points. So honestly, the two best shows so far of the year have been the ones outside of Texas, in my opinion.
Sure. Now, Holly, as you said, it seems to be like your biggest star that you've got going right now. What do you think her ceiling is?
I mean, I think she's going to be considered the greatest female fighter in the world by the time she's done. In history, let me say. Because I think that once it's all said and done, it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. And I think that right now, and I don't know, this is speculation. Everyone speculates about her ground game. Nobody really knows. Her ground game may be freaking unbelievable. I don't know. She never goes there. She knocks people out. You know what I mean? But I mean, so it may be incredible. If I was to guess, and judging from her coaches, what her coaches had to say, I think that she probably beats 90% of the people in the UFC right now in her weight division. That's today. And I think that in the next year to 2 years, she's the champion. I don't think she's ready for Ronda right now. And that's a lot of that, like I said, is based off what her coaches say. But I think that if you look at where the division is with the women, you have Ronda and then you have everyone else, you know? Mm-hmm. And although I think Alexis Davis has a great chance, but you have Ronda, and then there's kind of a drop-off. I think that the women's MMA hasn't, you know, is at this point just nowhere near as deep as the men's. And so right now it's an incredible opportunity for her to put her stamp on it.
Yeah, I would agree, certainly, and certainly on Rousey, and certainly I actually agree with you on Alexa Davis. I think she's got a really good shot. Getting back to Holly, though, as you said, if you think she can beat 90% of the women in the UFC, and since I'm assuming she's still under contract to you, are you going to be able to get her a fight with a level of competition that's going to challenge her?
It's going to be difficult. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat it. I mean, people, I know that on the forums and different places, people say, get us somebody, you're getting your cans, and they blow me up on that sort of stuff. And so I've always said, and this is the only time I've ever done this, and I'll say to you and I'll say to anybody else, well, who do you think she should fight? And I'll go get them. And you know what? Nobody is crickets. Nobody has an opinion. No one has a suggestion. They just want to complain. Because believe me, I would love a suggestion. If you could give me the ideas, I'll go and try to get them. You see, what happens is, and what people don't see is that we have several lifts. I go through the 125ers, the 135ers, and the 145ers, just in case they want to drop down to 135. And I call all of, I've got a huge list, several pages of female fighters from around the world, as far out as New Zealand, wherever, you name it. I've got them, okay? And we go through this list. There's actually three of us. And we go down the list calling people, trying to make matchups. And you know what? I'm not saying that they're scared. I mean, people misinterpret me sometimes. I'm not saying people are scared. But what you have to understand is that if these girls are 135, for example, okay, and let's just say they're 7-0, 8-0, okay, if they fight Holly, it's an incredibly dangerous fight for them. There's just no two ways about it, okay? It's going to be... They have quite an opponent in front of them, and there's a chance you're going to be a highlight girl. You know, there's a very strong possibility just because of her stand-up prowess. All right. So if you're 8-0, chances are you're probably going to the UFC because the division is such that I'm literally calling these ladies, and at the same time I'm calling them, Sean Shelby calling. Mm-hmm. And so this is who I'm competing with to try to get people to match up with Holly. Well, you know, Beth Correa just won the other night. She was going to fight Holly. And then the UFC came in and got her. The girl, Larissa Pacheco, who's 9-0, I think she just went to 10-0. I tried to get her to fight Holly as well. But they actually told me at the time that she was signing with the UFC, and that hasn't happened yet. So I don't know what the situation with that is. I don't know if they were just telling me that for me to go away or what. But, you know, it's constantly a battle to try to get these matchups. I mean, I always find people. I'm always going to find somebody for her to fight. And, yes, I've got some ideas on the girls that I want to line up. So, of course, she's injured right now, so there's no point in even me going down that road. She probably won't be fighting again until the earliest, end of September, maybe even October. It's always a challenge. But it's not just a challenge for me, which is, I think that's the thing that people fail to understand. When Holly's asking for this kind of money, and she's asking for more money than what is standard, and people slam her for that, I mean, it's about supply and demand. At the end of the day, who are they going to get? I mean, they're going to run out of people. They already are running out of people. They're going to run out of marketable people for Ronda to fight. And as they say, Ronda's the biggest star. So, I mean, we're not the only ones having trouble. The UFC's having trouble as well, and there's a big dog.
The obvious question, when you say, is there a fight for Holly, what about Cyborg? Has that even been something that – could you put something like that together where you guys are, or is that just out of the question, out of the water?
No, that's not out of the question at all. We've talked about that several times. And so that's definitely a possibility. I think the question would be whether it would be a pay-per-view or whether it would just be – for Legacy on Access TV, I think that's the question. I think that's basically the main thing. I mean, how would it be put together? I think that's it. And the money, you know, they're going to want some big money. yeah, for that fight. Yeah. So, you know, that's going to be the other issue as well.
When,
but it's possible.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, well, the question that I was following up with, I mean, is it something that has – so you're saying that this has been something that has been discussed. It's just working out the logistical, the financials, that sort of thing, to actually get it done.
Absolutely. That's it. Wow. I mean, there's so many options right now. You know, I guess in some ways, more so for Holly, as weird as that sounds, I hate that Cyborg gets slammed for all this, by the way. I've met her several times. She's an absolute sweetheart. It's unfortunate. I hate seeing the bullying that's going on. She's made a mistake, obviously, and got in trouble for it. But she's a really nice person. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to meet her. But she really is. She's really cool. And, but yeah, obviously, if to what you see in the media is any indication, the UFC has absolutely no intention in life of getting her in there. At least one would assume with the name calling and so forth that that's highly unlikely to happen. Whereas with Holly, there's obviously a strong possibility she's going to go to the UFC, you know? And so I think right now, Holly, you would probably have to say, has more options, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just working through those options, her management working through those options and seeing which ones are the best direction to go. She's even, I mean, Holly's even got a boxing fight on the table. If she wanted to go back to boxing, she can make $250,000 at the end of this year, boxing.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's what she's being offered. She's being offered $250,000 to fight Cecilia Brakus. And so, you know, that's, she's got that. She's obviously got the UFC that are interested. She's got us. We pay, you know, we have a, you know, she does well with us. And then, of course, the Cyborg. So she's got a lot of different things to weigh.
Okay. Now, one thing I wanted to go into is the busy schedule you guys have coming up. You have some title fights that were announced. The first one I want to discuss is Damon the Leech Jackson gets the title shot finally. He's taking on Leonard Garcia at Legacy 33. So how do you see this fight? I'm very excited. Damon Jackson is an up-and-comer. He has a great submission game. He has really all the tools necessary to be the next featherweight champion, quite frankly. Now, is this an exciting fight for you guys to announce? And how did Damon react? Because he's been a guest we had in the past. How did he react when you guys let him know?
Oh, he was stoked. I mean, I think that, obviously he's earned it. He's an absolute beast. He's got an incredible record. He definitely has a style that's going to give anybody problems. I mean, they call him the Leech for a reason. He's got great wrestling, incredible submission game. He has a ton of heart. I've seen him get rocked in a fight over at Odessa or Midland. In Midland, maybe it was about a year or so ago, and he got rocked, man. And he turned around and then one pulled it out by armbar. It was unbelievable. It was close to being stopped, and he weathered the storm and ended up winning by submission. So, I mean, he has all the tools. It's funny, he's kind of got a lot of very similar tools, but on the opposite spectrum, if that makes sense for Leonard. He's very tough. He's going to be very aggressive. He's going to leave it all out there hanging, except that he's more of a submission grappler, submission wrestler. Leonard, on the other hand, of course, is very hard to submit himself. Obviously, he's a veteran, so you can never, you know, his takedown defense is going to be is excellent. He likes to keep it up there and keep the fight standing. Man, it's a tough. I think that if you ask Leonard would agree. This is a very, very tough fight. So if it does, I mean, this is high level stuff. We're incredibly excited. Obviously, it's gonna be awesome.
Now, talking about the veterans you have on your roster right now, two names that really jump out at me are Leonard Garcia and Paul Bentallo. Now, what's it like having these guys that have UFC success? They've, in Bentallo's case, he's been everywhere. What's it like having those guys on your roster competing for Legacy?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, Paul's a great dude, too. So he's fun to be around. He's really a pleasure to work with. And, you know, he really hasn't lost a step. I mean, he really hasn't. I mean, his drop to 205, you know, for a 40-year-old, he's moved, man. I mean, he's really doing incredibly well. So it's great to have him on the roster. Leonard's been incredible to work with. Great dude, very grateful. You know, just a great, we're really very honored to have him. And obviously, the thing about Leonard, with people, you know, people say whatever they want to say about Leonard, but you're pretty much guaranteed an exciting fight. I mean, you can't say that for anybody, for everybody. But you go to a Leonard Garcia fight, and you're probably going to see a badass fight. That's all there is to it. And you're going to stand up, and you're going to scream, and there's probably going to be a standing O, and it's just incredible the way this dude fights. I really sometimes get the feeling he goes out there with a plan, and then as soon as he gets hit, it goes to hell. He just wants to scrap, you know? And yeah. I think you can see that a lot of times in the way he fights. And, of course, we got picked up Jonathan Brookins as well, who fought on our Tulsa fight card. And, yeah. You know, seeing Jonathan fight at 125 was a trip. So, obviously, with his length at a flyweight, that's going to be – he's going to be very hard to handle. We have a great roster. We're very excited.
Now, this is more a question about your personal thoughts about a fight. And you don't have to answer this, but I'm just curious because you're here right now. But when Myron Dennis upset Paul Bentello for the lightweight title, well, not lightweight, light heavyweight title, what were your thoughts? Did you think that does Bentello have an immediate rematch? I guess that's my question. What did you think of that fight, and does he have an immediate rematch?
You know, I told Paul the manager this, and anyone else who asked, you know, a lot of people were screaming robbery, and I'm sure you've seen that, all the talk that said it was a robbery, deserves a media rematch, and so forth, and I just didn't see it that way. You know, I guess the way I see a robbery is when it's so obvious. If it's a close fight, it can't be a robbery. You know what I mean? And it was a close fight. I was actually sitting there with the commissioner from Oklahoma, And I personally thought the first couple of rounds Paul took handily. I thought he might finish it, you know. I thought he was overwhelming him, and I thought he was winning very clearly. And maybe it was in the last quarter or so of the second round. I don't know when it's exact around that time, but I remember thinking, man, Myron's kind of finding his rhythm here, you know. And then next thing you know, I turned around to the commissioner. I said, man, this isn't that easy to score anymore. You know, this has all of a sudden become a close fight. And sure enough, it was close on the scorecards, and Myron ends up getting the fight. Now, Paul is going to get a rematch, most likely. But I do think that it was, I find it hard to call it a robbery, you know, when it was that close. So,
okay.
Anyway, that's my take.
Okay, well, getting back to your upcoming events, your next major card is Legacy 31 on June 13th, and it features two title fights. You have Bubba Bush versus Roger Narvaez, and in the main event, you have UFC and WEC veteran Demasio Page versus the wrestling standout Henry Cejudo. How do you think that main event's going to go?
Well, I think it's going to be Henry's biggest test, there's no doubt about it. I think that Henry's obvious strength is his wrestling. And he has very good hands, too. Henry was wanted to try to make the Olympic boxing team. So his hands are nothing to sneeze at. But he's good. Got good stand-up. But obviously that's Demasio's world, you know. He's a knockout artist. And what I think people often forget is that Demasio gets knocked a lot of times for a submission game. Okay, they say that he gets submitted, and maybe that's where sometimes his weakness is, but that's not Henry's strength. It's not a submission game. I don't know if he's ever submitted anybody. I don't think he has, and because he's not a submission fighter. He is a wrestler. Well, Demasio is a wrestler as well, and a lot of people don't realize that, but it's going to be interesting, man. It's going to be a tough fight. It's definitely going to be Henry's toughest fight. But it's an incredible opportunity for him. Obviously, Henry's young and trying to make his way in the world rankings for MMA, and he's getting an opportunity to go against a vet, a well-known vet at that, and make his mark. But it ain't gonna be easy. I mean, a lot of the time, you know, Demasio hits hard. you know? I mean, he just,
yeah,
when
he does.
Pitched, something bad's going to happen. He has bad intentions. And honestly, like I said, DiMaggio has great wrestling. It's not Olympic gold medalist wrestling, but he has a good MMA wrestling. So it's going to be a hell of a battle. It's going to be an incredible fight.
Now, the one thing, as I look at this fight, it's going to be contested at flyweight. Do you have any concern, since I know Henry's had trouble making 125 before, and I don't think DiMaggio has ever fought at 125. Do you have any concern that these guys won't be able to make the weight and their title fight will have to go to a catchweight?
Yes, absolutely. I'd be crazy not to. As far as DiMaggio goes, he was at 127 in Dallas, and honestly, he stopped cutting weight. He did it easily. You know, he was basically 1 pound off. He would have had to fight that one at 126, basically, because it was 125 plus one. It wasn't a title fight. So he was really 1 pound off, and he just stopped just because they had agreed on a weight. And it was like, screw it, why we'll lose another pound? You know what I mean? So for DiMaggio, he's got it. It's very easy for him. He's not a big guy, you know? And then, but for Henry, it's a little bit more of a concern. I'm not going to lie. There's been weight issues. And I think that, you know, I've had conversations with him. I had a conversation with him after the last one. I think that we've put things in place to try to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself in terms of his weight issues. But it still comes down to him. I mean, this is a contracted fight. He was contracted that by this stage with Legacy that he would get a title shot if he won. And a title shot is what it is. It's 125 even, you know. So, I mean, I think a lot of his future, and I don't want to be too overdramatic about this, but a lot of his future depends on this. Not only winning the fight, but making weight. Because if he doesn't make weight and it screws all that up, even if he beats DiMaggio, it's not going to be a good look. It's hard to imagine him being able to take that next step until he's proven he's disciplined enough to make the weight that he's wanting to fight at.
Right.
So, there you go.
Yeah, that's a great answer. You know, looking forward to the number of events you have going forward. You got a lot of fights here, a lot of up-and-comers, a lot of veterans. What fight on one of these upcoming cards are you most looking forward to, other than the obvious title fights?
Oh, man. I guess you told me besides the title fights, but of course, and it's hard because I'm so focused, and not just on those fights, of course, but you got Thomas Almeida fighting a week after on June 20th at our first Shreveport, our Louisiana show. I mean, this guy, I know this is going to be crazy. I know the forum, the computer keyboard warriors are going to blow me up for this, but, man, he may be the best bantamweight fighter in the world. He's 16-0. You know, he's won every single fight. He's not gone the distance in a single fight yet. 16-0. And he's not submitting these guys and knocking them out. I mean, if you watch his stand-up, I saw somebody break down his stand-up. I don't know which side it was on, but they were breaking it down. And they were saying they think he may be have the top three stand-up currently in the world, including anyone in the UFC, that his stand-up is that high level. You know, that's impressive, man. So it's hard to look beyond that. We feel very privileged to have someone with a 16-0 record fighting for our title. But I don't know if you saw the last fight with Carl Machado. Carl Machado is also undefeated at 6-0. And his last fight, man, he throws down. He's got an incredible submission game. So this is going to be a huge test for Thomas. It's going to be absolute fireworks. It's hard to go beyond that. And, of course, we do have Bubba Bush and Roger Navarez. I think both of those guys are probably set up to take that next step. Roger, of course, is undefeated. Bubba could easily have been undefeated. Bubba's two losses, one was a disqualification. He had the guy's back, was hitting him, and the referee called it a DQ because he hit the back of his head, even though it was clearly about to be over. And then the other one, he was 15 seconds away from beating UFC fighter Andrew Craig. On the scorecards, at least. Andrew was actually, I mean, it was a great fight, and Andrew was definitely taking over the last few rounds, but on the scorecards, Bubba was actually winning. So at the end of that fight, he would have been declared the winner, and he got stopped 15 seconds before that. So technically, Bubba could easily be undefeated at very worst, only one loss on his record. So both of these guys could be gone shortly. And we also have a whole new crop of prospects that will be coming through, especially on our Houston show. Man, I say this to everyone that never I do the radio shows and so forth, and I mean this because I'm always my most critical on Legacy, but we've never had a bad show. Knock on wood, but up to this point, we have not ever had a bad show. So if you want to tune in and you want to get some consistency and see some great fights, check it out.
Yeah. That's great. And, you know, Mick, one of the things I like about Legacy is, as you mentioned, is the prospects you have coming up and all these new guys that maybe have one professional fight or two professional fights. Is there a guy you can think of now that we should be really looking forward to as maybe the next guy?
Oh, wow. Whew. You know, gosh, I can't even think. There's so many, man. We have so many great prospects. Have you seen all the Texas fighters on the UFC Fight Card now?
Oh, yeah, we've seen a few of them.
Yeah, it's crazy. But in Oklahoma, I would say there's a kid named Jarrett Rouse who has an incredible future. Andrew Todhunter, who was actually made it onto the Ultimate Fighter this season, but he got injured. So he wasn't able to participate. He's got an incredible future. Some other guys from Oklahoma. I think those are the main two that come to mind. There's some younger prospects as well coming up that definitely have a great future. In terms of Texas, we got Charlie Ontiveros, Kyle Machado, there's a gentleman named Domingo Pilarte, who's a really great prospect, and those two fought, and Domingo lost that decision, but it was an absolute battle, incredible war. And then up in Dallas, we got Evan Thompson, Damon Jackson, Eli Jimenez, George Bacaraou. We've got them everywhere, man. We've got prospects out the wazoo. we're very fortunate, and they're all exciting. So, yeah, there you go.
All right. Your next event will be taking place June 13th. It's on Access TV, and it's going to be taking place, that's in Houston, and that's followed up the following week. My last question is Legacy 32. That's your first trip to Louisiana. But my last question that I have for you is these events. You just got out of this. You had three events within the course of, I believe it was 3 weeks. What has that experience been for you? That's a little bit tougher. You didn't really have a time to decompress, so to say.
No, it sucks. I mean, the biggest thing that sucks about it, I'll be honest with you. I will always be honest with you, but I'll tell you this straight. It really is that when I'm on these events, I'm out of house. Honestly, I drink a lot. It wears me down. I end up going out and eating and drinking too much all the time. And so then I feel like crap. But the biggest thing is health-wise that I feel great. But then the biggest thing is my kids. I've got five kids. And so leaving my kids behind for those days and missing soccer games and stuff like that is for the birds. So that's definitely the worst part about it. So we promised them we're not going to leave them at least until the end of this year because my wife and I do this together. Mm-hmm. And so we're taking, in Houston, obviously, it's not a problem because we're home. And then in Shreveport, we're going to take them with us. And then in Dallas, we're going to take them with us. And then we have a Tunica, Mississippi show on August 29th. We're going to take them with us. So they're going to be, and then September's back in Tulsa. I don't think we'll take them with us there. But they don't have to worry about anything until September. So, yeah, that's 3 weeks. And I don't know how, I don't see how Dana and Sean Shelby and Joe Silva and those guys do it. I mean, I'm assuming they've all got families. I just think that would be an absolute nightmare. It wouldn't be worth it, quite honestly. It's not worth it. I don't care how much money you give me. So there you go. There's my answer.
Well, there you go. But, Mick, congratulations on the expansion. I just want to let people know it's 44 days away on Access TV. If you're local to Houston or close to Houston, it's June 13th for Legacy Fighting Championships 31, and it's headlined by Cejudo. It's going to be a title fight, so make sure you see that as well. You can keep in touch with Mick on Twitter at MickMaynard2 or Legacy Fighting, and it's legacyfights.net for more information on those cards. Mick, it's always a pleasure. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate yours right. more, trust me, but you have a great night now.
Thank you. Good night.
Omega, I'll tell you, every time he comes here, this was the second time we talked to him last October before the expansions were probably thought of, but he didn't start doing them quite yet. He is just great to talk to.
He absolutely is. He's obviously knows his business. He knows his fighters, and you know he knows how to market them. I think he's a fantastic individual. I love talking to him. It's one of the best interviews we have on this show.
Oh, definitely. And the thing that strikes me in a world in – because fighting combat sports, throw wrestling in there, if you will, there's a lot of scumbags that
yeah.
will lie and deceive to you. He doesn't. He just lays it all on the line. Most people would say it's the greatest thing. I get to go out there, get to go to these amazing locales. He hates leaving his family, and he'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you ask him a question, you get the straight answer. You don't get a lot of spin. He tells you what is it like it is. He's very honest, very upfront with us. I appreciate that. We don't get that from everyone we talk to. But that is, you know, it's great. It's refreshing. I just wish I had Access TV to watch more of his stuff live. So.
Well, with that impending, what's the word I'm looking for?
The merger with Comcast?
Yes.
Time Warner? Maybe. We'll see.
If there's any good, it will be that Omega will be able to watch
yeah.
even more MMA.
Yes, that's right.
Well, speaking of MMA, we had an event this weekend. Omega, are you quite ready, sir?
I am certainly ready.
From the beautiful Baltimore Arena in Baltimore, Maryland, 13,485 showed up to watch UFC 172. Of course, it was highlighted by a light heavyweight fight, championship fight, between John Jones and Glover Teixeira. Things didn't go my way on my pick, but more on that. We're going to start from the bottom this time because, Omega, I saw every fight now. I know you didn't see every fight, but you can still give your analysis on what you've heard or what you've seen or things of that nature. Now, you did see this one if you kept the pay-per-view on after the title fight. This was a bantamweight fight between Chris Beal, Patrick Williams, and a beautiful flying knee KO. It happened in the second round, 1 minute 51 seconds.
How great was that?
You saw it.
That was video game.
Oh, was it ever.
And that was just a wild, sloppy, crazy fight.
It was, wasn't it? It was, but that's what makes MMA MMA sometimes. Just throwing two guys in there, they really both had something to prove. I don't think either of them are ranked. I don't think they're very well known.
They're both making their UFC debut. This was very much a pair of fighters who were trying to make their mark, and they were doing it with either, you know, just wild movements, wild swinging punches, and ultimately it ended up finishing with a crazy, out of nowhere, flying knee in the second round that just dropped Patrick Williams to the ground flat on his back. As pretty a KO as you will see.
And for his treble, he did get performance of the night, Chris Beale. Now, moving along, that was actually on UFC Fight Pass, but like I said, if you had kept on the title fight.
It was so good they showed it on the preliminary after the preliminaries were just about over, too. So
did they?
They showed it at least three times.
Wow.
So
that's how good that knockout was, people. And that was followed up by another great knockout. Now, Charlie Brenneman, I like the Spaniard. I do, Omega. I only wish the best for this young man, but he just can't get it together. He did win the first round. Will you agree with me on that?
No, I think he did win the first round in that fight. I think he managed to get more strikes in. Grappled better. You know, he had the better. He didn't dominate, but he certainly won the round.
Sure. But 21 seconds into the second round, things changed for the worst as Danny Castillo knocked out the Spaniard. What's this mean for the Spaniard? It just seems he can't get things together in UFC.
Yeah, I think it means he's back out. Quite frankly, this was the second KO in a row that was just beautiful. Just spectacular knockout. You know, Castillo with that right hand comes out, hits Brenneman just as flush as you could be, lays him out as stiff as a board. Ridiculous. And, you know, but you got to suspect Brenneman's chin at this point. He just can't seem to handle the level of competition in the UFC. And I think it's only getting worse. I mean, he's been around a long time, but the guys are just getting better. And he just seems to not have the skills to take on the guys in the UFC. And I think this is just another match that proved it.
As sad as it seems, he's a great hook for a promotion like Cage Fury Fighting Championships. That's a regional in the Philly, New Jersey area. Great fit there. It's a name. He wins there. He was a champion there. I think that's probably the best for him.
Well, he's lost two in a row in the UFC since he's come back. I mean, you know, you don't last that long. You know, especially if you've had two finishes,
yeah.
which he has. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's going to get released. That's just my opinion. I don't know that, but I mean,
it's a darn shame too because he seems like a really great guy.
You know, there's plenty of great guys that just can't be the best in the world or be among the best in the world, and this seems to have.
He's not even like gatekeeper material, or he doesn't have that. Like Diego Sanchez, I think, is the Pat Patterson of UFC. He's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
Because he's one of those. But then again, so was Leonard Garcia. Now Leonard Garcia is with Legacy. So I guess if you stop, I don't know what it was in Garcia's. What happened there? Was he released or did he ask for the release? I don't remember.
I believe he was released. I don't think he asked for it, but I may be wrong about that.
But whatever the case is, if you're an exciting fighter, I don't think you're, like, unless it gets to the point of leaving where it's like, dude, you really should think about leaving. I mean, Lieben made that choice on his own, but I'm sure Dana White was like, come on.
Yeah.
For your own safety at this point.
Right.
So anyway, I'm getting off on the tangent here. We had Korea defeated Jessie Ann Duke, and that hurt me on my counter move standings. I picked Duke on. She was one of my fighters.
Yeah.
I only got 20 measly points for significant strikes. So what's this mean for Duke, and what's this mean for the winner, Korea?
The Betche Korea, you know,
she said this is my fight.
It was. I mean, it certainly rockets her up the rankings. She's moved up two spaces up and now cracking the top 10. She looks like she's got something there. I don't know that she's got elite level skill, but I think she's got enough of a game there that she can grow and certainly challenge some of the middle tier of the top 10.
I'd like to see a Carmouche fight.
I wouldn't mind that either. For Duke, though, I mean, this is it shocks me. This is another Stefan Struve type situation. You got a fighter with, you know, physical gifts, long arms, long legs, just not using them. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Correa was able to get inside and land as many strikes as she was and just basically...
Powerful shots, too.
Powerful shots. And just overwhelmed Duke is somewhat... is not shocking, but it's a bit silly. I mean, Jessamyn Duke should be using her link. She should be using her jab. She should be using those leg kicks to keep girls, especially that much shorter than her, at bay. Land the strikes and at least outpoint them. I mean, I'm not saying don't go for the finish, but, I mean, keep... I mean, use your gifts, and she wasn't using them, and she and Correa took advantage. It's somewhat different. Now she did show some decent throws, so
she did.
You can tell that she's been training with Ronda Rousey, that she's picked up some really good judo throws. She supposedly has this great Muay Thai that Joe Rogan keeps talking about.
I haven't seen it quite yet.
We saw it someone on the Ultimate Fighter show.
You know what, but it's kind of like that legendary Brazilian jiu-jitsu game that Roy Nelson supposedly has.
Right.
My sources tell me, Omega, that he has great Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But she needs to, if she's going to be a factor, she needs to try to put it all together. She needs to learn to use her, what she's got, and use them as weapons, and that's what she hasn't done. And hopefully, I don't know if Ronda Rousey can teach her that, but somebody needs to.
Definitely. Now, Takanori Gomi defeated Isaac Valley Flag, and this happened by unanimous decision. I didn't actually see the fight, but what's this mean for Gomi? We were talking that he really needed to win this fight, and he did. So what's this mean for him at this point?
I don't think it means much. I think it means he sticks around. I think he means certainly he's a name that is well-respected from his Pride days. You know, he's going to kind of hang out here. I mean, maybe he gets another shot at Diego Sanchez. That wouldn't be bad. But, I mean, he's got other guys he can fight at lightweight. You know, this isn't rocketing him up the rankings. This, you know, beating Isaac Valley Flag does not, you know, really get you anywhere.
It doesn't get you Holly Holm money.
It doesn't get you – yeah, exactly. It doesn't even get you in the top 15. So, you know, he's a gatekeeper at this point. He's a name. Certainly, if they go to Japan, you can trot him out, and you'll get a lot of Japanese chanting for him. So, I mean, he's good. You're going to hate me for this, but he's kind of like Dan Henderson at this point.
Well, no, it's very – I know poor Hendo's weaknesses at this point. I think if he was honest with himself, he would even give you as much, but he's a fighter still trying to fight. Stop it.
No, he's fine. I mean, it was good. I mean, I didn't think it was. I thought it was a decently competitive fight. I mean, I think Isaac Valley Flag was competitive. He won the first round, and Gomi came from behind to pick it up and take the victory. It was good. I mean, but it doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things.
Joseph Benavidez picking up a win against Tim Elliott, a beautiful submission guillotine choke. Happened in the first round, 4 minutes, 8 seconds. What were your thoughts on that one?
I thought Tim Elliott came out looking really strong, was really all over Joseph Benavidez to start with, was really pressuring him, throwing some shots, getting on top and getting the better of the grappling game. He made a mistake, though, at some point. He made it towards the end of the first round. He let Joseph Benavidez get his neck and then get mount, and that is not what you want to happen with Joseph Benavidez, because he will crank your neck. And this is what Joseph did. He landed that guillotine. He had Elliot's arms trapped to the point where Elliot had to tap with his legs. Yeah, so...
Oh, yes. Now I recall that. That was even more beautiful. I would have put it over more, but that was a wonderful submission.
It was.
He was the one who did. My God, that was beautiful. You don't see that. He had to tap with, because he was just wrapped like a cute little package.
Oh yeah, I mean both his arms are trapped within Benavidez's legs. He had nothing to do. All he could do was kick and try to get the ref to call out the fight, which eventually he did. I think this is strong for Benavidez. Benavidez was certainly going to get over on this one. I just think now he's stuck in this little limbo, waiting to hope to get another shot at Demetrius Johnson. He's lost twice. It's hard to see it.
Definitely, but he is a talented fighter. I think this should at least promote him to the main card. Now, speaking of that main card, it started off with another beautiful submission, a guillotine choke. Max Holloway defeated Andre Touchy-Feely. And the young Hawaiian continues to impress here. I really like Holloway. It was a beautiful submission. Really kind of came out of nowhere, and it was another guillotine. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is a fight I didn't see, but I mean, I was not convinced about Holloway's overall skill of whether how he was going to measure up, going forward. But pulling out a victory on a pay-per-view card is certainly a feather in his cap. Now riding the momentum of two fights, I think he deserves to step up in competition at this point.
What would you say? I'm looking at Conor McGregor. What do you think of that?
Well, Conor McGregor just got a fight with. They just announced today. I forget who it was. It's Cole Miller.
Okay, but someone of that nature, you would say?
Maybe. I think Conor McGregor's a bit of a step. I think you'd be looking at someone. Conor McGregor, I think, is probably underranked right now. But sure, someone in that general area makes a lot of sense. Yeah, maybe Dennis Bermudez, for example.
Now, speaking of guillotine chokes, it was three in a row. This one happened in the first round. Jim Miller is a bear. You hit him in the stomach, and he doesn't like it too much. He goes right for you. He defeated Yancy Medeiros. Actually choked him out, Omega. I'm recalling this now because it's called a technical submission. The reason being that he didn't tap, technically.
Yeah.
he was put to sleep. And
he was saved.
It was a beautiful, I've never seen, and Joe Rogan said this during the commentary, he's never seen somebody celebrate while somebody was out on top of him. Because he raised his arms, he was very excited for the win, but Medeiros, you still needed help to get him off. But a beautiful win for Jim Miller. Jim Miller, we've talked about on the show, he's really starting to make a name again. Where do you see him now?
Well, look, Jim Miller's a guy that you're virtually assured of a great fight when he fights, or a finish or something of that nature.
No doubt.
You know, he's one of those go-to guys that the UFC can always turn to for an exciting fight. He continues that going on. He's other than the fight to Benson Henderson, and I guess he fought Joe Lozano to decision as well, but that was a bad fight for him. But he continues to win. He continues to rack up wins. I mean, he's 24-4. His losses to Nate Diaz, Ben Henderson, Gray Maynard, Frankie Edgar, all really top guys. And
contenders, either contenders or champions.
Or champion. And this is since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been around a long time. Well, I guess he technically lost to Pat Healy, but it was no contest overturn. But anyway. Well, anyway, that being said.
It's legal in Colorado. You leave him alone.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's just a great guy. But, he's got to find a way to break through the elite of the division, and that's going to be tricky. I mean, he deserves another step up in competition at this point. I mean, Yancy Medeiros was not ranked. I would really like to see him face someone like, maybe Donald Cerrone, maybe get another crack at Nate Diaz, for example.
I'd like to see the guy I can't say his name.
Habib Nurmagomedov.
Thank you.
I'd like to see that. I would not mind that. That would not be a bad fight either. I think that Habib is probably more deserving of a higher level competition. But that doesn't mean if schedules align that I would lament a Jim Miller fight. So.
Yeah, they only fought a week apart, so that should align perfectly. If I'm Dana White, I'm making that fight, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with that. Completely fine with that fight.
Well, here was another fight that we talked about at length. Actually, I don't think we did. I think we just said Rockhold is going to win. That's what happened. He had a submission on his mind, Omega. He got Bosch down. He submitted him with an inverted triangle Kimura.
That was crazy.
Just think about that for a minute. It happened in the first round, 2 minutes and 8 seconds. He didn't waste any time. Pretty much the entire about 2 minutes of that fight was Bosch desperately trying to get out of the grasp of Luke Rockhold. Rockhold he really made a statement, I thought.
Well, let's face it, Bosch put himself in that position when he went for the shot on Rockhold, and Rockhold stuffed it. And from there, just took his back and, you know, basically he didn't even bother to turn around and take the back. He just went straight down with an inverted triangle and locked that in. When he couldn't tap Bosch with that, he went for the Kimura and managed to finish it. I mean, it was kind of weird. It was, you don't really see inverted triangle Kimuras, but that was Rockhold's fight from the start. It was just a matter of time. It was really much like watching a python or an anaconda just suffocate a guy slowly.
That's
until
what it was.
He just gave up, and that was eventually what happened. So.
Now, what do we? Bosch is still ranked 13 somehow.
I don't get that.
But. Me neither. But where? And they really tried with the pre-fight package to put him over as some type of threat. Bosch should be gone. I'm not even going to talk about him, where he goes from here. He'll have another fight and lose, or possibly win, because he looks like a lumberjack. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at the rankings in middleweight. Anderson Silva is still out with injury. Vitor Belfort, God knows where he is with his TRT. Apparently, he tested himself, and everything's fine.
Yeah. It's all good.
I love MMA. So you have Machida, who's already lined up for the fight July 4th weekend. You have Jacare, and then you have Rockhold. What do you do? What do you do with Rockhold? Because Rockhold, I really think, is an exciting fighter. He was the last Strikeforce champion, even though Strikeforce doesn't matter. But he was the last Strikeforce champion. Where do you go with him?
I think Rockhold's in the conversation for a shot here, quite frankly. You know, given that we have to wait for Machida to sort himself out, if Vitor can get off the TRT and get his stuff settled with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, you got to figure he's next in line for a title shot after that. So you think, well, I got Jacare Souza, maybe that's a fight you put together. He's already beat Tim Kennedy, so you're not going to worry about that.
I'd assume he beat Munoz or Bisping. Anybody that's really ranked below him at this point, I don't see is on the level.
You would expect that to happen.
I know it's MMA, so you have a fighter's chance. I'm just saying, you look at it and you go, hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about it is, that's the interesting thing about Rockhold is you sit there and you say, well, I beat Jacare already. You know, granted, that was a different Jacare. That was a Jacare of a few years ago. I think the Jacare of today is
it's
a little
scary.
Different fighter. He's a scary fighter. So I wouldn't mind seeing that rematch. You know, I know him and Bisping have been jawing back and forth. Fine. If that's what they want to do, throw it away. That's fine. But I think Rockhold wins that fight. I mean, you know, maybe Munoz makes sense. But and he's in this limbo right now, and he's good enough to beat pretty much everybody you put in front of him. But we got this thing to sort out at the top right now. And,
he did call out Belfort. He did call out Vitor. He's not ducking Vitor.
Well, he's not ducking. And I think he wants revenge. I mean, that first round spinning heel kick KO, he wants to avenge that. And I don't blame him. I think that makes a lot of sense, too. Again, if Vitor can straighten out his deal with Nevada.
Well, here's something. Somebody got something straightened out. Anthony Johnson. Destroying the myth of Phil Davis. And, wow, you look at these rankings now for light heavyweight. Anthony Johnson skyrockets up 9 spots to number 5. Phil Davis spins out of control to number 3. This was really a guy that they were putting over as something huge. Phil Davis.
Yep.
Knockout power, great wrestler, Penn State, blah, blah, blah. He is now down ranked at number 7. Anthony Johnson now all of a sudden becomes a danger. And based on that fight, some of the things I said last week I might have to take back. He did look tremendous at light heavyweight. He's not trying to cut all that weight. He's not trying to starve himself. So maybe this is the dawning of a new era for Anthony Rumble Johnson. What do you think about this?
I mean, I think this is the weight class he needs to be at, you know.
Well, definitely. After that performance.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. You know, you should fight at the lowest weight class where you can be effective. And sometimes it means you can't. It's not the lowest weight class you can reach.
have trouble reaching in his.
Or whatever. you know, whether or not rocketing him up to number five, you know, that doesn't feel right. But then I look at the guys below him, and I was like, okay, I
get
it.
Except for Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson should have a perpetual number two ranking.
Right. Of course. I forgot what show I'm on. Anyway. but you look at him, you say, okay, well, that, dang. I mean, he looked good. I mean, there's no other way about it. He completely made Phil Davis look ineffective.
In every essence of the game.
Absolutely.
He did go for a finish, so it wasn't exciting on that route, but it was a very effective fight, and he picked him apart.
I mean, he stuffed Phil Davis at every turn. He wasn't allowing him to get the takedown, wasn't allowing him to wrestle, was out striking him, doing everything you need to do, and just making Phil Davis look silly. I'm not going to go so far as to say he looks scary, but he certainly looked good. So you got to wonder what he's going to be like. You know, can he continue to make weight, continue to be as disciplined? Has he turned over a new leaf? I think he has. And, you know, someone with that kind of athletic gifts does give you – have a few questions about, you know, what is his ceiling now? And, you know, if you look at the rest of the division above him, you look at, well, Daniel Cormier, Rashad Evans, Glover Teixeira, and Alexander Gustafsson, he's probably a challenge for all those guys.
No, I agree with that. What I was going to say is Henderson would be a good fight to see where he is. However, he's already tied up with Cormier coming up, I believe, at UFC 173. I'm not sure. I know it's coming soon. So you have Henderson already wrapped up with Cormier. You have Evans. I think he's injured.
Evans is injured, I believe, yes. So
you look at this and you go, what makes sense? I look at perhaps Teixeira. Now, that might be nonsense in a way because Teixeira is just coming off a title shot, but why not? Let's see where Rumble is.
I don't think it's nonsense. I really don't. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, because your other option is to have Johnson kind of wait it out, and then you give Glover another shot, someone below him, and try to get his momentum back. But I think Glover put on enough of an effort. I think what you do is you take Teixeira and you take Johnson and you make it a title eliminator. And you say, you know, Johnson, you win, you get a shot. Glover, well, we'll have to talk about that. But, you know, Glover gets to stay in the conversation if he can beat.
Do you think that Johnson. They set this up for Phil Davis, perhaps? An unannounced title eliminator, give him Rumble Johnson. It looks better on paper before this fight for Phil Davis. Do you think that was the idea, that Phil Davis would kind of rocket up there?
I think that was the plan. I think there was skepticism about Rumble going into that fight, and I think they thought Phil Davis would probably win or wrestle out a point victory, and then you got another guy set up for John Jones after Gustafsson and Cormier.
Mm.
But that didn't happen. So,
well, here was another. Fight. John Jones is just on a completely different level. Now, this went to decision again. John Jones really didn't go for a finish. He didn't have to, quite frankly. Defeating Glover Teixeira, it was unanimous. It was 50-45 on all three judges' scorecards. It was complete domination. And he even threw in some jokes toward the end, Omega, where he was doing the George Foreman cover-up defense. He was doing the Muhammad Ali, Mayweather. It's just John Jones is. There's only been Machida one around against John Jones. Gustafsson did very well. I think Alexander won that fight. But besides those two people, nobody. Is on the same level as John Jones. As much as I dislike him as a human being, no one is on the same level as John Jones.
It's hard.
Thoughts on this fight?
It's hard to argue with that. I mean, he is, you know, at 26, he has to be in the conversation for at least the light heavyweight greatest of all time. I mean, nobody can touch him right now. You know, we talked about Gustafsson, you know, kind of eradicating the aura of invincibility. I think that's still true, but there's still a steep drop-off in talent between between John Jones and the rest of the light heavyweight division. And I think Glover Teixeira, who we thought might be the second coming of Chuck Liddell, a guy with all kinds of power, with a well-rounded game, just could not get anything going against Jones at all. And I think that speaks to, has served as a reminder of just what kind of talent John Jones has, and gives you a little bit of pause about, you know, whether Gustafson can handle him again. I think Jones came out here making a statement, and I think he wanted to really come out and prove that he had an off night with Gustafson, and I think he made a definite statement here. I mean, he is head and shoulders above the rest of the light heavyweight division, and he is in this for the long haul to be the light heavyweight champion.
He's so effective at the elbows, whether it's a backspinning elbow, whether it's just a straight elbow to your eye. He's so effective with the kicks. He's so effective at using his reach, and that's a segue for you, sir.
Yes, his reach. There's a number of ways to use your reach. It doesn't involve
putting your hand
in your opponent's eye. The fact that he was not penalized for that in any shape is a travesty.
Do you think Mergliata, his bluff was blown? Because Mergliata said he was going to take... Now, just to... For people who didn't see the fight, just put your hand, your outreached hand right now, over your face, kind of like a face palm in a way. That's kind of what he was doing. Start at the top of the head and then kind of go down. Is kind of like somebody's cracking the proverbial egg on your head when you were a kid. They would do it to trick. That never happened to you, anyway.
That's
but it was
happened to people. Okay, yeah.
Next time I see you, I'll crack an egg on your head.
Okay.
But, that's kind of what it was. There were a few eye pokes. Mergliata, the referee, did say, "Hey, stop," or I'll take a point. It happened twice in the first round, I believe it was, and then it kind of stopped. There were no more. Do you think that Mergliata should have stopped him from putting the hand on the head at that point? Because the fourth and fifth rounds, that's all he was doing. It was kind of like, okay, maybe this is a better example, but it was kind of like when you're fighting a little kid and you put your hand on their head to keep them back. That's what John Jones was effectively doing in a way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard for me to say that you're accidentally poked a guy in the eye when you're deliberately putting your hand out with open fingers out there, and you're repeatedly doing that. No, you're not. This isn't accidental. That's a deliberate thing, and maybe your finger happened to get in the eye, but you know that that's a distinct possibility when you do that. It's ridiculous. I mean, it should not be allowed because, I mean, that's dangerous. This is safety. This is why eye pokes are illegal. And, you know, if you're doing that kind of thing, you should be taking a point away right immediately. He's not going to stop that until he gets punished for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, this is what could be John Jones' weakness. If someone wants to step up, if a ref's going to step up and say, or a commission's going to step up and say, we're not going to allow this kind of behavior. We're not going to allow you to put to have this open hand. If you're going to do that stuff and you're going to take a point away immediately, you're not going to get a warning because that's just silly. And that until it costs John Jones a fight, or it costs John Jones enough points where it was even a possibility he might lose the fight, he's not going to stop doing it. You know, why would he?
Yeah, Dana White has said it has to stop, but I'm not sure how much power he has.
Well, it's in the ref's hands. The ref has to take a point away. And you know, even if we go back to the Brennan fight, you know, Brennan was blatantly grabbing the fence.
True.
You know, a couple times there was a takedown that didn't happen because Brennan grabbed the fence. That is exactly the type of situation where a point should be taken away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Refs are not using their powers here to enforce the rules.
Do you think that's because of backlash from the internet? From what do you think that comes from?
Well, I think no ref wants to be the guy that takes a point away and decides to fight. But,
yeah.
But I mean, quite frankly, unless the rules are enforced in some kind of consistent manner, the guys are going to do these illegal things. And that's, I think we would rather have a ref take a point away and enforce the rules you know, we might not like that the fight outcome is changed by it, but we're okay with you enforcing the rules, as opposed to where a fight outcome is changed because you didn't enforce the rules.
Very true.
And that's where I draw the line. That's why I think that, you know, John, you know, situations like this, John Jones reaching out and grabbing and poking guys in the eye, it happened twice in that fight. That's ridiculous. There should have been at least one point taken away for that. If you do that twice, no. In my opinion, you should have taken it away.
But
now,
what about just
maybe
the,
someone like Bill? Maybe an MMA ref like Bill Buchwalter might disagree with me on that. But this is just as a fan, I think that's what we have to have as a sport to make this to keep fighter safety as the number one issue.
Well, what about just putting the hand on the head like he was doing the fourth and fifth rounds most blatantly? I thought.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do – I mean, you can't not have a guy – because of the way mixed martial arts is fought, you're not going to be able to say you can't put your hand on a guy's head because it's a grappling sport. Eventually, you're going to do that. The idea is you're going to keep – I mean, this is where ref's discretion is going to have to come in. If you're going to keep doing that just to keep a guy at bay, just to keep length, then you're going to have to do it with either a closed fist – or you're going to have to watch your fingers, and if you get your fingers caught in a guy's eye, and he, you know, at that point, it's a point. It should be a point.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. I mean, like I said, you can't. There's certain things about mixed martial arts. You're not going to avoid all this stuff, but you should be punished if you use it to effect where you either accidentally or intentionally you poke someone in the eye.
So. No, I certainly agree with you, Omega. So that wraps up UFC 172. We don't have to talk about something coming up because the next thing coming up, we have a week off. That's pretty snazzy.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this next week. It's UFC Fight Night. It's actually going to be happening on May 10th. And that's going to be Matt Brown taking on Eric Silva is your main event. An interesting fight, welterweight fight. We'll talk about that more in the coming weeks, though. We'll talk about it next week, quite frankly.
Thanks for being so big.